Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jeb Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger. Surprise with new topics every single week, and jab me with your daily dose of UFC. And we do have a little bit of UFC today. We have five new fights to talk about with you that took place on Dana White's Contender Series, and we also have five new matchups to talk about that have been recently announced by Dana White. But other than that, this is all about WWE Wrestlepaloozas that will be going down this Saturday. I believe it's going down this Saturday. It's the 20th, yeah, this Saturday. In Indianapolis, the main event, John Cena, Brock Lesnar, is going to be exciting. As of right now, we have five matchups confirmed. So we're going to be going over all those. I'm going to be giving my thoughts, my predictions on what I think will happen. We're also going to be discussing week three of the NFL season. And we are 25-7, I believe, on predictions. We are nasty to start this year. So we're going to be covering all of that and very exciting stuff all around. And so we got a good episode ahead of us today. A lot of surprises, a lot of new things to be discussed. But yes, September rolls on, and I'm up here in Minnesota, and it is hot. Let me just tell you guys, it is super hot out today, and I have to actually run 4 miles to record for a YouTube video that I'm filming, and I'm not looking forward to that, but I think I'm going to do it today just to bite the bullet and get it over with. But I think we shouldn't waste any more time. I think we should dive right into today's events, because it's fun, guys, and you know, there's no corruption here. There's no evil on this show. No, we only spread positivity, and what's more positive than some new UFC fights? We have five new fights to bring to your guys' attentions, courtesy of the one and only Dana White. First off, UFC Vegas 112, the final event of the year, going down at the UFC Apex December 13th, has a women's flyweight matchup as Teresa Bleda, the Czech Republican. Is that how you say it? Or the Czech? Is that what you call people from the Czech Republic? Is back for the first time in a while to take on the Canadian Jamie Lynn Horth. Jamie's 3-2 in the UFC. Teresa is 2-1. Teresa holds a win over Gabrielle Fernandez, probably the biggest win for her. As for Jamie Lynn Horth, probably Haley Cohen is the biggest name for her. Look, not too much hype with this one, but it is going down on UFC Vegas 112. I'm probably going to ride with Teresa Bleda. Her nickname's Rhonda. And the last time someone with a nickname, Russian Rhonda, was Irina Alexeva, and she got absolutely dog-walked her last fight out. So maybe that's not a good sign for Teresa Bleda, but nonetheless, this fight's going down at UFC Vegas 112. Another matchup for you, this one, Madison Square Garden, UFC 322, November 15th in New York, GM3. Gerald Meerschaert is back in action to take on Kyle Daukaus. Kyle Daukaus, through his first six UFC fights, went 2-4. Actually, 7, he also had a no contest against Kevin Holland, I remember. And then he left. He left, and you know, he went over to the CFFC, and he dominated, all right? He won the belt there. He was doing fantastic. And since coming back, he finished Michelle Pereira in 40 freaking seconds, and now he's got himself a matchup coming with GM3. And as for Gerald Meerschaert, 12-12 in the company. His ceiling's Edmund Shabazzian. That's the highest level of competition he can beat. He's 36-20 professionally, but going for his 25th UFC fight, looking to go on with a positive record. I like it. However, I am going to ride with Kyle the Darce Knight Daukaus, who is 16-4. And in reality, he has lost to some pretty tough competition. You know, Roman Dolidze is one name that he's lost to. He's also lost to, I actually have no idea. I can't remember his early UFC stages, but he's back. He's hungry, and the 32-year-old is looking to be into his prime. So should be a good fight overall. We'll be on the prelims in New York, and I think one of them is from New York, or at least from that eastern region, so maybe they'll be cheered for. We'll have to see. GM3, Kyle Daukaus going down UFC 322. Here's a matchup for you. Also on that card, November 15th, the 15th-ranked Roman Kopylov will be taking on the unranked Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez. What a fight. What a fight between both of these guys. We saw them reach their peaks of their careers when Roman Kopylov got, you know, beaten by Paulo Costa and Gregory Rodriguez lost to Jared Cannonier. They are equally coming in similar spots. 13-4 for Kopylov. He's 5-4 in the UFC. RoboCop 17-6 professionally, 8-3 in the UFC. But Gregory, coming off a beautiful round one knockout of Jack Hermanson. I mean, one of the best knockouts of the year. And as for Kopylov, well, you know, he beat Chris Curtis earlier this year in a fight of the night, which was pretty decent. So this one should be good. I honestly don't know who to lean with here. I might go with Gregory Rodriguez just from the fact he pushes the pace. But Gregory has to watch the straights of Kopylov, has to watch the kicks. As for Kopylov, I mean, the dude's never really been in trouble of being finished on the feet. So if Rodriguez mixes up with some takedowns, that's where he will find himself in trouble. This is a good matchup and could find its way onto the main card of UFC 322, but I doubt it as we have Bo Nickel's return. That is right. At UFC 322, Bo Nickel will be back in action as he takes on the black belt hunter Rodolfo Vieira. Bo Nickel recently suffered his first career defeat in Iowa when he lost to Rainer De Ridder, but to be fair, Rainer De Ridder is nasty. I mean, Rainer De Ridder, what is he now? The number 5 freaking middleweight on the planet. He is doing extraordinary things since joining the UFC in November of last year. Bo is 7-1, professionally 4-1 in the UFC. Of those 4 wins, 3 of them are finishes. Actually, all of his wins but the Paul Craig one are finishes, which the fact he did finish Paul Craig is pretty embarrassing, being that we watched what Modestus Bukauskas did to him. And as for Rodolfo Vieira, you know, 9 fights in, he's beaten Dustin Stolfus, Armin Petrosian, Cody Brundage. He's pretty average. He is pretty average, but I will say his submission game is very intense. I will give Bo Nickel an edge on the feet, but on the ground, you know, Bo Nickel's going to have to be careful or he's going to get caught in the guard, get caught in a knee bar, arm bar. It's tricky when you're facing Rodolfo Vieira. I presume this will open the main card. I still think they're going to put Bo Nickel on the main card every time, so this will probably get the edge over Rodriguez and Kopylov. But it is a good fight overall, and I'll be excited to watch it. And speaking of the man we just mentioned, I did not realize he's actually ranked number 4 as Rainer De Ridder has a new opponent for the UFC Vancouver main event. He was supposed to fight Fluffy Anthony Hernandez, but sadly Fluffy had to pull out. So in taking his place is the number 11th ranked Brendan Allen. And Brendan Allen, he has picked up a win over Marvin Vettori this year. Was a really good win, I'll say. And other than that, his last loss was Nazanin Imavov. You know, so not the worst loss. Actually, I think he lost to Anthony Hernandez in Seattle. Yeah, so oddly enough, Brendan Allen could steal the spot from Anthony Hernandez, who beat him, and move all the way up to the number 4 spot in the world. I'm definitely riding with Rainer De Ridder here. I mean, the dude is coming to the UFC, beaten GM3. He's beaten Kevin Holland. He's beaten Bo Nickel. And he has now beaten Robert Whittaker. I mean, incredible. Truly incredible. The rise of Rainer De Ridder is insane. And he's 21-2. He was a double champion in 1, and it looks like he's been a double champion. He fights like it. You'll love to see it. This one should be a good contest. I'm probably leaning Rainer De Ridder. However, Brendan Allen can make it scrappy. You know, watching that Marvin Vettori Brendan Allen fight, it was a dogfight. It was a war, and it really took a lot out of Brendan Allen to dig in and go toe-to-toe with Marvin Vettori, a guy who is notoriously impossible to finish. So, UFC Vancouver, new main event. Keep your eyes peeled. It should be a good one. But yeah, that's all the new UFC fights we have. I'm so impressed we're even getting new ones. I really am. You know, we usually enter this kind of time of the year where you don't really get many new fight announcements. Usually everything's kind of stale, kind of stagnant. So it's good to know that the UFC is still dropping us new fights. We're still waiting for our apex of main events on the 1st and 8th. So we don't even know that. We don't even know the UFC Qatar main event. There's still some big fights to be announced, but we also have some announcements for the rankings. That's right, the UFC rankings have updated, and they have made some very interesting changes. I am curious as to what they're doing, so I say we talk about it right now and then. As for our women's divisions to kick off our rankings updates, only one change. That is Macy Barber passing Amanda Lemos in the women's pound for pound. I mean, makes no sense. Tatiana Suarez is also now tied at number 1 with Virna Jandidoba. Makes no sense. Utterly no sense is made there. Tatiana Suarez is clearly not on the same level as Virna Jandidoba. She just isn't at all. And the fact that, you know, she's tied at number 1, she should have just stayed at number 2. I don't get what they're doing there. And as for Macy Barber, Macy Barber hasn't gotten a win in so long. I generally can't remember the last time Macy Barber got a win. Let's actually look here. Last time she won, March 2024 against Caitlin Chookagian. How in the world is she even still ranked at women's flyweight? But Macy Barber has a fight coming up with Karin Silva. I mean, I don't know. The UFC rankings team was on one this update, and this doesn't surprise me, but no updates for any of the women's fights. We don't even know any really big women's fights. I mean, I guess, yeah, Macy Barber fighting, Aaron Blanchfield's taking on someone, Manny Fiorot's taking on someone. I don't know. I guess there's some fights in some divisions, but other than that, no big changes in the rankings at all. Men's pound for pound, no changes. Lightweight, welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, featherweight, no changes. Little surprised that there wasn't a drop in Josh or in Gene Silva, but I can also see that who would pass him. Patricio Pitbull, Steve Garcia, you know, might as well just keep him there. I'll be curious to see where Gene Silva fights next. Definitely in the bottom five of the featherweight division. And as for Diego Lopez, there's a matchmaking dilemma with the top six, including Volk, at the featherweight division. So whatever they do with that, we discussed that in the last episode, I think that will determine where he fights next. But yeah, no real big changes overall. There are just two divisions we have to talk about. So we'll start with the one that had a very good change. That is David Martinez debuting at number 11. Rob Font drops three spots to number 12. And it's crazy to think that David Martinez, who was originally supposed to fight Quang Lee, Carlos Vera, for goodness sakes, both of those guys at points, and now he's on a 9-fight winning streak, 13-1, and is ranked at number 11. Happy for David, and I can easily see a big fight in the top 10 up next for him. And, you know, Henry Cejudo moves up to 10, Amzahabi up to 9, Vincent Oliveira drops to 13, Marcus McGee to 14, Kyle Phillips to 15, and Montel Jackson is booted from the rankings, which doesn't really make sense. They should have booted Kyler Phillips and Marcus McGee because Montel Jackson is fighting the number 6 guy, Deiveson Figueiredo, coming up here soon. So I don't really know what the rankings committee was thinking there, but oh well. David, I don't really know who to matchmake him with next. I know there's word Mario Bautista and Umar Nurmagomedov may be fighting, so I think the loser of that versus David could be an option. You could also have, you know, the loser of Amanzabi and Marlon Vera, if that happens, them fight David Martinez. You could also have Vincius Oliveira fight David Martinez. There's a lot of options. As for Rob Font, I would love to see him fight someone outside of the top 15, as he has just fallen into this role of being a gatekeeper. So those are all your big changes at bantamweight. David Martinez debuts at 11. Love to see it. Now, let's get into what makes zero sense. Like, this legit is, I've never seen this before. We're going to the men's heavyweight division. Marcin Tybura just passed Ante Delaje from 10 to 9. Marcin Tybura is now ranked at 9. Ante Delaje is at 10. If you didn't know, literally 2 weeks ago in Paris, Ante Delaje knocked Marcin Tybura out round number 1. So I have no idea what the logic is here. I have one thought. This is my one thought, is that Ante Delaje is going to be fighting a top guy. I'm thinking Walter Cortez Acosta, maybe Sergey Pavlovich, and they wanted his number to be lower for some reason. I generally don't know. That doesn't even make sense, but Marcin Tybura, who just got knocked up by Ante Delaje, is now ranked ahead of him in the rankings. By the way, time has passed. He had passed him. He had moved past Marcin, and they've decided to move him past him again. So I don't know if this is going to get ruled to a no contest or something. I generally have no idea, but the UFC is on one with their rankings committee. Dana White desperately needs to institute that meta ranking system. Remember when he said he's going to do that, and then nothing came of that? Yeah, that just got swept under the rug. So a couple changes here and there. The only one that makes sense is Dave Martinez debuting at 11. I don't know how Henry Cejudo is even still in the rankings. Fun fact, Henry Cejudo hasn't won a UFC fight since UFC 249 in 2020. He hasn't won a fight in 5 years and is ranked at number 10. Now, mind you, his losses are to the champion, the where are his losses? Aljamain Sterling's number 5 featherweight. Another loss is to Song Yadong. He's ranked number 5. So I guess two number 5 guys and the champ, but still, no idea how he's still in the rankings or even who he could fight next. Who is Henry Cejudo going to fight next? Like, generally, who is Henry Cejudo going to fight next? Is he going to be fighting David Martinez? Is he going to be fighting Vincius Oliveira? I don't believe it. Get him out of the rankings. Henry Cejudo is not coming back anytime soon. So those are your rankings updates. They are awful this week. It makes no sense. And it annoys me how it makes no sense. I really want it to make sense. Help make it make sense. That's all I ask. Make it make sense, UFC. And something tells me it's not going to make sense. But I'll tell you what does make sense. And that is handing out 4 new contracts on Dana White's Contender Series. That's right. I had another privilege of watching Dana White's Contender Series episode 6 of season 9. And it delivered. It delivered. Now, there were a couple doozies. Both decisions were rather boring, but all the ones where there were finishes, I'll say there were two very good fights. They both ended in round number one. Other than that, some other stuff happened here and there. I say we analyze it and discuss what went down on Dana White's Contender Series Season 9, Episode 6. So we kicked it off. Men's Bantamweight Division and Cody Chovancic got it done over Rafael Uchegbo, just as we predicted. And oh, I forgot to mention, I went 5-0 on predictions and finished number one on verdict in the world. Yeah, I'm nasty with predictions. I know ball. Cody, anywhere this fight went, just dominated. Rafael Uchegbo looked the least UFC ready of anyone I've seen. He got dropped in round one, somehow survived. Round two landed a takedown, but then it was reversed. And then in the first 10 seconds of round three, absorbed one strike, went down, and that was it. A 10-second round three knockout for Cody Chovancic. And Cody, he will improve to 9-0, and this will be his sixth career finish, fourth career knockout. You best betcha Dana gave him a contract. I do want to say the one key thing here is the 5 minutes and 9 seconds of control time. Round one, Uchegbo gave up his guard while failing a takedown and then proceeded to do nothing. Like, he just laid in guard. It was so boring. And then round three, he tried to make it competitive, but like, none of his strikes were really, he landed 25 significant strikes. I can tell you right now, none of them were significant whatsoever, but it was satisfying watching him get knocked out. Wasn't an early stoppage at all. And how about Uchegbo? Two losses now in his career, and I'll say this dude is not UFC ready whatsoever. As for Cody Chovancic, look, 27 years old, from Ontario, didn't take much damage. Can we get this kid on the Vancouver card? I know there's going to be bantamweights for him to fight. I know someone suggested Damon Blackshear. That would be a good fight. I would really like that. You could even matchmake him with Hector Sozo, who we're going to talk about in the main event. Like, I would love to see two Dana White's Contender Series guys go at it to see truly who is good and who is UFC level even more so. But good win for Cody Chovancic. We predicted it. And Rafael Uchegbo, yeah, I don't think you're coming back anytime soon. Next up, Patty McCrory and Insoo Wang. And this was one of the most torn fights I was on this card. And I'm glad I rode with Patty as a 30-27, 30-27, and a 30-27 to Insoo Wang. And I didn't even know Insoo Wang trains with the Korean Zombie, for goodness sakes. He trains with the Korean Zombie, and it was actually Patty McCrory who stepped in here on short notice. But yeah, anywhere this went, this was all Patty. 93 significant strikes to 37. 1 of 2 on takedowns for a minute and 45 seconds of control time. That was just to end the fight. Like, he just took him down to make a statement. But yeah, Patty McCrory outstruck him everywhere, was landing more strikes, and Insoo Wang was always on the back foot. And then in round two, he landed one big strike that cut Patty McCrory, but legit, he landed 10 significant strikes in round number two, and it was only one of them that ended up cutting him. So rough showing from both of these guys. Very mediocre performance, and Dana White came on and said, look, this is Dana White's Contender Series. You got to show me you want it, and I didn't see it, guys. So neither contract is going out, certainly not to Insoo Wang, who suffers his second career loss. And as for Patty McCrory, look, he's on a 3-fight winning streak. He fought on The Ultimate Fighter. He's 7-1, but he needs to revamp himself. And the good thing is, he's 27. He'll probably go back to Cage Warriors, pick up some wins, and I could definitely see him getting a second shot on Season 10. And mind you, Kyle Brawl is a perfect example. He won a boring decision his first season, came back, and dominated in his second opportunity on another season. So Patty McCrory, all hope is not lost, but as for this one, wasn't an exciting fight, and not getting a contract for the winner. Now, next up, I can't even believe I didn't know this in our pre-show when we talked about this on episode 223, but Tommy Gant trades with Daniel Cormier. I didn't even know that, and I rode with Tommy Gant, and Tommy Gant dominated him. Adam Livingston here. Tommy Gant was just mauling. The fight lasted 2 minutes 47 seconds, 2 minutes 32 seconds of control time for Tommy Gant. His American wrestling style, by the way, ACC champ. This is a very, very good wrestler. He dominated, absolutely smothered Adam Livingston here. And you know what? I'll be the first to say it. It was entertaining to watch, okay? Did what he had to do. Locked in a nasty guillotine choke, and Adam Livingston was forced to tap. First defeat for Adam Livingston, but the kid's only 24. So, like, to be fair, like, this isn't a bad loss whatsoever at all, especially knowing how good Tommy Gant is going to be. So, Adam will fall to 6-1, but don't worry, I think he'll be back. He just needs to, you know, go out, get a couple wins. Come back when you're 11-1 on a 5-fight winning streak. That'll do it. Tommy Gant, though, I mean, this guy, he improves to 11-0, And of those 11 wins, he has 6 round 1 finishes and 10 finishes overall. 5 KOs, 5 subs. This guy is dominant. Now, I was skeptical of Tommy, as his opponent records were very bad. And as for Adam, you know, he had been coming in, five of his six wins were by finish, 2 fights in LFA. He both won. But the strength of schedule for Tommy Game has been insane. This guy didn't even debut a year ago. Okay, this guy literally is freaking insane. He has been gotten so many fights in the last year. It has been wild to witness. And you know what? He's entered the UFC. He's Daniel Cormier's boy. And I would love to see this guy mix it in the men's lightweight division. I think he's going to be a problem. You know, when I look at the type of style that wins fights, he has a fight-winning style. He's that Marab, Umar Nurmagomedov, Khabib, Islam, pressure where you're just takedown, landing. Look at DC, for example. Great example. His coach, who unofficial coach, I think. I don't think he could coach due to whatever his things are, but yeah, Tommy Gant gets it done. Very entertaining. You already know, of course, he got a contract. I mean, Dana White was talking about how DC was like talking about how my boy is gonna win this week, you guys gotta keep your eyes open for him, and he did, so it worked out perfectly. So good win for Tommy Gant, dominates Adam Livingston, and he provided our second finish of this card. Third contract came up next as Iwo Baranowski absolutely mauled Muhammad Ali. 22nd KO, and I cannot believe this guy was a plus 200 underdog. I mean, what? Who makes these? Who thought Muhammad Ali could get it done? Now, to be fair, we start the fight off. First leg kick landed for Muhammad Ali. Drops Iwo. Iwo gets back up right away. Muhammad puts on the pressure, lands like a little jab or hook. And then Iwo just lands the most beautiful hook coming in from underneath shot. Clips Muhammad down. He goes, one follow-up shot. That was it. His lights were out. Yeah, Iwo Baranowski. Dana White is pumped to see him. Lightweight division, look out. Look out. Now, I will say, Iwo, he is only 6 foot, so not the tallest light heavyweight, but to be fair, Azamat Mirzakhanov is like 5'11", so it works for him. Iwo looked beautiful in this matchup, did what he had to do, and yeah, I'm excited to see this guy fight next. I really am. Muhammad Ali, and no. Bye-bye to Muhammad. This is only his 5th professional fight, too. You know, he was skeptical coming in, you know, on why people were riding with him. And I'm very happy Iwo got it done. 6-0 record now, professionally. All of them round one finishes. Are they knockouts? I think he has some subs. Yeah, he has some subs, but all of his wins are in round one. His longest fight is 3 minutes and 54 seconds. He is going to come in and make a lot of people a lot of money. I can feel it. For Muhammad, bye-bye. No. Absolutely not. Muhammad Ali is 31 years old, is not cut out for the UFC, but Iwo is. Iwo, Tommy Gant, definitely giving me cut out for the UFC vibes. Cody Kochovic is definitely going to need to prove himself, but yeah, this was the third contract given out of the night of our 4 fights, and that brought us to the main event. Now, I do want to say, with the main event, because Hector Sosa did get a contract, Maxim Lee is tough to put away. It was very evident that Maxim Lee was very tough to put away. It's going to say 2 submission attempts from Hector Sosa. He tried a lot more. He was working the neck. He was working the armbar. He was trying everything he could. Hector Sosa genuinely was trying to put away Maxim Lee and couldn't. 30-27, 30-27, 30-26. Those were the scorecards. Maxim Lee didn't throw a strike in round 3. 4.5 minutes of control time. Just grappled him. Landed a bunch of like mini strikes. Went for his 2 official submission attempts there. But yeah, Hector Sosa mauls him. The dude improves to a very impressive 14-1. He had recently lost his dad this past weekend, and Dana White said, you know what? Guy's 14-1. He looked good. By the way, outstruck him 124-13. Ignore the 32 significant strikes, 13. 124 total strikes, 13. That's what's up, and managed to get the win. So Hector Sosa also trains with Theo Topura. He's now on an 11-fight winning streak, and I think that this was a deserved contract. Now, I don't know how he's going to do in the UFC, but he certainly looks like he has the skills. You know, to fight guys like Boston Galanos, maybe even like a guy like Marcus McGee could be a good test for him. I think that he could pick up wins. I definitely think there are a certain number of unranked bantamweights that he could easily dismantle and make quick work of. So, good win for Hector Sosa. Was somehow the underdog at watching this fight. Let me maybe go. Are the odds makers like doing this on purpose so people bet on underdogs? I don't know, but this was nowhere near close at all for Maxim Lee. Now, Maxim Lee, the kid's only 9-1 now, but he was 9-0. So I definitely think he can bounce back. I mean, he's 26 years old. So come back 3 years later, come back in 2 years or something, definitely some potential. But 4 contracts given out on this episode, not as good as I'll say the last 3 weeks, but also not as bad. You know, Tommy Gantt, Iwo, Cody, all getting big finishes, all getting contracts, and the emotional aspect for Hecker helped, especially with a dominant 30-26 performance on my scorecard as well. So we look at 9.7 will be coming up next week. Should be another good week of fights. But yeah, 9.6 in the books, and out of 10, I think it gets a 6 out of 10. That's what I'll give it. Out of all these guys, Tom gonna rank them as Tommy Gantt, Iwo, Hecker Sosa, and Cody Chovancic in terms of potential for coming into the UFC. And as for Paddy McCrory, I have a feeling Paddy will make it to the UFC. I just feel like he's going to put on boring Apex events. Like, he just didn't look like he had a finishing aspect, which is what you really need.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Need to get a contract on the Contender Series. So, Daniel's Contender Series, 9.6 in the books. Overall, not too shabby. And that kind of reminds me of something else that's in the books, and that is week number 2 of the NFL season. And with that, we look ahead to week number 3. That's right, NFL week number 3 is already upon us. The season is fast and moving, and we have 16 new matchups to drop predictions for. And we're doing good this year. We're doing really good on predictions. And what I'm trying not to do, I'm not trying to rely on the internet. I'm trying to just use my genuine thinking when it comes to these matchups and also picking them where I know I'll be rooting for a team if I have a lot of fantasy players on them. So I always like to make sure I'm doing that because it's at the end of the day, it's who I think will win, but also who I want to win to an extent. So we kick things off Thursday Night Football coming up tomorrow. You know, I'm recording this on the 17th, so better listen to this and get your predictions in ahead of week number 18. Bills will be hosting the Dolphins, and yeah, a little divisional matchup coming at you. Bills are 2-0, Dolphins are 0-2. It's been abysmal. Abysmal start for the Dolphins. Nothing's going well for them. And this Bills team is just dominant. They're just a really dominant team. And to be fair, I think that this Bills team has the potential to maybe make it their year. And as for the Dolphins, this is looking quite the opposite of their year. Bills are -900. Dolphins are +550. So if you want to, if you have an extra $100, throw it on the Dolphins. You could win yourself $650. But if you want to make $100 for sure, throw $900 on the Bills, because there's no shot the Bills are dropping this. It is a 99% picked to 1% for the Bills and Dolphins. I've never seen odds like this. These odds are ridiculous ahead of Thursday Night Football. Now, this is a divisional matchup, and you know, I always think divisional matchups hold more potential for upsets compared to out-of-division matchups, but yeah, Josh Allen is going to be dominant. I have A-Chain in a league, but I don't really doubt A-Chain's not going to pop off. I think Devin A-Chain will have a good game, but James Cook, Josh Allen, Keon Coleman, they're going to eat. Dalton Kincaid's going to eat, and the Bills are going to pick up a victory in this one. So Bills over Dolphins is my prediction for Thursday Night Football. With that, we head to our noon slate, and we kick things off with the Packers and the Browns. Browns are 0-2. Packers are 2-0. Good wins to start the year for the Packers. Victories over the Commanders and the Lions. Commanders and Lions. I mean, mind you, Commanders and Lions was only a playoff matchup last year. Packers knocked them both off by double digits. Browns 0-2. Dylan Gabriel got some reps in. I would love to see them start Dylan Gabriel over Joe Flacco. Will they? I doubt it. I really don't think they're going to do that. So I'm going to go with the Packers. They're going to be my eliminator pick of the week. I've gone with the Vikings. I've gone with the Bengals. And my next eliminator prediction will be the Packers. If you don't know what the eliminator is, it's on ESPN. You can pick one team every week to win. And then if you make it, if you get that prediction correctly, you go the next week, but you can't use that team the rest of the season. So I think the Packers are going to dominate the Browns. The Browns have really shown me nothing to make me think they'll be a contender this year, which doesn't surprise me because it's the Cleveland Browns. So Packers over the Browns in our NFL quick picks. Next up, Colts and Titans. Colts 2-0, 88% picked. They are -200. Titans are 0-2 at +170. I don't really know what's going on with the Titans, but there's just a trend with these round number one drafted picks, and Cam Ward is following that trend. Now, mind you, he's coming into a Titans system, which sucks. The Titans have completely fallen apart after losing Derrick Henry. It's like the team just didn't know what to do with themselves. And as for the Colts, they're 2-0, and something just tells me they're going to be a team that starts off 3-0. You're going to be like, how are the Colts still undefeated? That's what the Colts are giving me. And I also picked up Daniel Jones in a league because Joe Shiesty's down for good for probably the season. And I also think I have Michael Pittman in the league for a chance. But Jonathan Taylor's been tearing it up. And if it's JT versus Tony Pollard on the ground, you already know I'm riding with Jonathan Taylor. Titans have struggled so far. Give me the favorite, the Colts. Next up, Bengals visiting the Vikings. And this is interesting. This matchup is interesting. Now, by the way, Vikings fan here. I always pick the Vikings. But I'm questioning if the Bengals will win here. Bengals are 2-0. They do have Jake Browning starting. But the Vikings have Carson Wentz. So here you're going to have Jake Browning, who we know is a very good backup. Mind you, you have a completely healthy team. Ja'Marr Chase, Chase Brown, T. Higgins. Everything's going well for the Bengals. For the Vikings, J.J. McCarthy just went down. The offense did nothing against the Falcons. And it all depends how Carson Wentz plays. Now, I would love to just envision Carson Wentz doing good. But like most things, I have to see it first. And I would very much like to pick the Bengals. They are an underdog here. I don't know how the Vikings can come in even as a minus 155 favorite, but I will be rooting for the Vikings. I will be rooting for the Vikings, but my prediction is going to lie with the Bengals. Now, I just think when I looked at how the Falcons played the Vikings, by the way, nothing's different. You know, they're in the same location. And the Bengals, they have better wide receivers. They have a similar running back style. You know, obviously Chase Brown is not on the level of Bijan Robinson, but still a good running back. And I think that this Vikings team is going to need to see if they have chemistry with Carson Wentz. Now, Carson Wentz could go out and cook the Bengals, but for me, I'm going to predict the Bengals to win. Who will I be rooting for? The Vikings. So, as I say before, sometimes, you know, I pick, you know, opposite to kind of think that they'll win, similar to the Packers. You know, I'm picking the Packers to win, hoping they lose. But in this instance, I am going to pick the Bengals, but I will be rooting for my Minnesota. But something tells me I should just pick the Vikings. Something tells me I should pick the Vikings to be a loyal fan, but no, I'm going to go with the Bengals because something tells me Jake Browning is sneaky good. Next noon game up, Steelers at the Patriots. Patriots 1-1, Steelers 1-1. Tale of two sides here. You know, Patriots managed to, you know, somehow not impress me. Patriots are not impressive. And, you know, they have Travion Henderson, but Ramondre Stevenson's out touching him. You have Stephon Diggs, yet I feel like Boutte gets more catches. For the Steelers, I mean, after a great week one game against the Jets, pretty pitiful performance against the Steelers. The Seahawks defense, I should say, made the Steelers look silly. Now, I do think the Patriots defense is not nearly as good as the Seahawks. And for the Steelers, like, they have a lot of good tools. They really do. And I just don't really see the Steelers defense getting cooked by Travion Henderson, Ramondre Stevenson, and Drake May be that. So I'm going to pick the Steelers to win. They are minus 130. Pats are only plus 110. Yeah. South will be happy. My good buddy is a Steelers fan. So we are going to ride with the Steelers. Next up, Los Angeles Rams plus 160 at the Philadelphia Eagles minus 190. Eagles are just going to be that team. It is better to pick the Eagles than not pick the Eagles. Now, will this be their toughest matchup of the season? Probably not, but it will provide a lot of challenges. Davante Adams and Puka Nacua are going to do their thing. Kyron Williams is obviously a menace. Matthew Stafford is good. But after watching them beat the Chiefs 20-17, seeing how strong their defense looked there, seeing them not really have the best day offensively, but still not have a bad day, like they didn't have any turnovers, I really do think that the Eagles can have a really good year. And will they repeat? I can't say, but I do say for their in season, they're going to win double digits. And when we're statistically looking at if we should pick them or not pick them each week, it is better to pick them. So I'm going to go with the Eagles over the Rams, and I will see the Rams lose their first game. Plus, the Rams are kind of on fraud watch. I don't know if they're as good as people are saying they're going to be. I mean, who have been the Rams' first two wins to start off the campaign? You know, that's always important to look at that. They beat the Texans, and they beat the Titans. Yeah. Yeah, let's not act like the Rams are a good 2-0 team as compared to the Eagles. So we're going to go with the Eagles over the Rams. Plus, I have Devontae Smith, and I really hope Devontae Smith does a very good job. Actually, if Saquon in League 2, I have so many players. It's ridiculous. Another noon game up next, Jets visiting the Bucks, and the Bucks are 2-0. The Bucks have squeaked away with two tough wins. The Bucks have had to fight and scratch and scream just to get these two wins, and I don't think they're going to be losing to the Tyrod Taylor Jets here. That's right. Justin Fields is already injured, and Tyrod Taylor is not giving game-winning vibes. I mean, it's crazy that the Bucs squeak away with a 23-20 win over the Falcons, and then squeak away with a 20-19 win over the Texans. And Baker, he's back at home. He's got the magic with him. And for the Jets, I do not see the chemistry there. I really don't. I do not see Tyrod Taylor just torching this Bucs defense. Buccaneers are -300 for a reason, but at +250 doesn't make me really count out the Jets entirely. So we're going to go with the Bucs over the Jets here. And I do have Mike Evans and Emeka Ibuka in some leagues, so I'll be rooting for them to an extent. Next up, next noon game, Raiders visiting the Commanders. After watching the pitiful, just atrocious offensive showing from the Raiders on Monday Night Football against the Chargers, there's no way I'm picking them. There's no way. Commanders only -165, and that is because I think, Jane Daniels is questionable right now, but start or don't start, the Commanders have so many weapons. I mean, their running back spot, I mean, Jack Krosky Merritt, I think, is going to break out soon. You obviously got Scary Terry, you obviously got Debo. This defense is looking pretty good, but at only -165, it does make me think why people aren't riding more with the Raiders. I have Jane Daniels in some leagues. I also have Ashton Jeanty. I also have Brock Bowers. I also have Debo. You know, I got a lot of players in this game, but I'm going to go with the Commanders here. They should win this one 2-1. And if the Raiders win somehow, then the Commanders are officially cooked for the year. I'll say that right now. If the Raiders beat the Commanders in this game, Commanders are not going to have the best season as compared to last year. But I got JD carrying them over the Raiders. Next noon game, Falcons, Panthers. Oh, you got to love the NFC East. Is this the NFC? I believe this is the NFC East here. Falcons visiting the Panthers. And yeah, you know, the Panthers look better than last year. Tatori McMillan looks good. Chuba Hubbard looks good. Bryce Young doesn't look as bad as he's looked the last 2 or 3 years. However, this Falcons team has some newfound momentum. They only lost by 3 to the Buccaneers, we just mentioned. They also really took it to the Vikings. I was at that game. They really dominated the Vikings in that game. And I think their defense is coming off high. Bijan is cooking ridiculously. And this team is healthy overall. So I got Falcons over the Panthers. If you are going to see the Falcons lose here, it's probably going to be to a team like the Panthers. However, there's just no shot. I'm riding with the Panthers over the Falcons whatsoever. I don't think I have a single Panthers player. I really don't ask for the Falcons. I do have Bijan in one league. Other than that, no one else really. Michael Penix did not have a good game against the Vikings, but Bijan absolutely cooked the Vikings left, right, and center. So Falcons over Panthers, lock it in. Then we'll round out our noon slate. The 0-2 Texans visiting the 1-1 Jacksonville Jaguars. The odds makers have this very close. +110 for the Texans, -130 for Jacksonville. ESPN predictors on this app, 63% going with Texans, 37% going with Jacksonville. So tough to say what will happen here. It really is. Divisional game, always close. And in terms of how these two have started their season, you know, Texans barely lost to the Bucs. 20-19. They did give up a comeback, so defensive-wise, they fell apart. As for week two, Jaguars were narrowly edged out by a Bengals team, which had just lost Joe Burrow, so not the best of looks. And they did let Jamar Chase cook them, so maybe Nico Collins will cook them in this instance. Now, if we go back to week one, Texans looked pretty bad against the Rams. Didn't even score a touchdown. And for the Jaguars, they were able to manhandle the Panthers by 16 points. For the Jags, they haven't really found their fitting this year to start. You know, Travis Hunter and Tutin and Travis Etienne, they trade away Bigsby. And you also have Brian Thomas Jr. in the mix. I feel like they don't really know what they're doing. Now, I will say the high scoring is very appetizing. I will say when I look at my picking of home and away teams, they're pretty even. This is probably my toughest matchup predicting of the week. Jags and Texans, we predict them live on here. I think about who I have, and I know I have Brian Thomas Jr. in the league. I know I have Nico Collins in a league. This is really tricky. Something's telling me the Jags might sneak away with this. And the Texans might start out 0-3, but also part of me can't really visualize this Texans team starting out 0-3. So I'm trying to see if I can visualize who's going to cook who. I can't really remember last year and the year before, since the CJ Stroud era and this new era for both teams, who's been playing better when they face one another. I feel like I'm just rambling on and on about nonsense, but we are going to go with the Texans here. A +110 underdog. This is a divisional game, and I don't think the Texans are going to start 0-3. If we revisit this and the Jags won, I will probably be somewhat saddened with myself. Next up, how about the AFC West Broncos visiting the Chargers? And yeah, simple as that. The Broncos are nowhere near as good as people thought they were going to be. They have started out the season 1-1, but the Chargers 2-0 and have cooked the Chiefs and the Raiders. They've cooked their divisional opponents, and they're looking to start out their 2025 campaign going 3-0 against the AFC West, and I got them. I got Chargers all day. Herbert is balling. You know, he's got a baddie girlfriend now, and that's definitely helping him. You know, he's needed his confidence boosted up, and it's been working. It really has been. He's been playing the best football he's played in the last few years, and you love to see it. Plus, Ladd McConkey, Keenan Allen, and Quentin Johnson have proved to be a trifecta of wide receivers who equally all get good target share and cook defenses. For the Broncos, I mean, genuinely, what have they done this season? They played the... who'd they play last week? A legit... they lost the Colts 29-28, and then week one, they beat the Titans by 8. Yeah, no shout, we're riding with the Broncos. Give me the Chargers. Next 3 o'clock game, Saints visiting the Seahawks. Seahawks at -400. Yeah, Saints are going to be a team we don't pick this season. I think they are just not good overall, and the Seahawks defense is looking really good. Offense is still finding its footing, but with Zach Charbonnet and Keith Walker in the backfield, with Cooper Kupp and Jackson Smith and Jigba on the sidelines, or on the sides as wide receivers, they're going to have success. So Seahawks over Saints, not much time needed to be spent here. However, I do hope Alvin Kamara has a good game. Next 3 o'clock game, or 3:30, Dallas Cowboys visiting the Chicago Bears, -110 for both of these teams. You know, the Bears, it's been tough. It's been a tough start for the Bears. You give up a comeback to the Vikings week one, you get blown out by 52-21 to your divisional rival in the Lions. It's been rough. It really has. And for the Cowboys, 1-1, a heartbreaking, heartbreaking defeat to the Eagles. But, you know, mind you, it is the Eagles. And then a a happy win beating the Giants. Now, I just have a feeling the Bears are going to start 0-3. This Cowboys team is pretty good. This is -110 to -110. Whoever ends up being the underdog, if the betting odds change, I would pick the underdog in this matchup. But the Bears have shown me nothing through the first two games that tell me they will beat this Cowboys team, especially stopping Javonte Williams, who is having a career revitalization out here in Dallas. So, Cowboys over Bears, that's my prediction. Final 3 o'clock game, going down 3:25. Cardinals visiting the 4D Niners. Both teams are 2-0. One of them will no longer be undefeated. Now, who will I go with here is really tricky, because I'm going with the 49ers. I think Cardinals are fraudulent. I think the Cardinals are super fraudulent to start the year. They are the worst 2-0 team out of any of them. I'm telling you that right now. Last week, this Cardinals team beat the Saints by 7. That is not good whatsoever. 7, we're not going to count that as a good victory. That was week 1. Week 2, last week, they beat the Panthers by 5 and gave up almost a full comeback by 20 points in the final quarter. I think this 49ers team, especially knowing that Mac Jones can cook in place of Brock Purdy, is going to have success. McCaffrey's healthy. Without Ayuk or Kittle, they still proved to have success as they were able to pick up a victory last week over the, as I look, the Saints, 26-21. Oh, so Saints did play a pretty close, but yeah. Going with the 49ers here. Cardinals are underdogs. 49ers are the favorites, but it's close. -125 to +105 should be a good game. Then our Sunday Night Football Chiefs going to the Giants. Both teams are 0-2, and this is going to be the Chiefs massacring the Giants. Unless, if the Chiefs start 0-3, it'd be so satisfying. But I mean, Russell Wilson, Malik Nabers, they're good. Tyrone Tracy Jr., they're good. Like Cam Scadaboo, this is a good Giants team compared to the last few years. I just don't really think it. 91% are picking the Chiefs, 9% are picking the Giants. If you pick the Giants, respect to you. But +240, that should definitely be a wider line. Give me the Chiefs all day. And then Monday Night Football, our final game of the week. Lions and Ravens, it's going to be so good. This is going to be such a good game. I'm not going to forget that the Lions lost to the Packers. And blowing out the Bears doesn't mean you're good. As for the Ravens, they kind of have had to face really good teams. You know, obviously week one, they took on the Chiefs. And yet again, another tough loss to start the season to the... Oh no, it was the Bills they took on, right? They took on the Bills week one. Oh yeah, 41-40. They did take on the Bills. That was a hard game, you know? And at the end of the day, it just came down to the Bills somehow pulling it out. And last week, they went out, dominated the Browns, 41-17. Give me the Ravens all day. I also have Lamar, you know, big Lamar supporter this season. Also, I am always a fan of Derrick Henry, and especially Zay Flowers. So Ravens over the Lions. And Monday Night Football games have proven to not be high scores. So we're going to say it'll be 20-14 in favor of the Ravens. So 34 total points scored in this game. Give me the Ravens over the Lions. But those are your Week 3 predictions for the NFL. And should be a good week. I do suspect good things to come of this week in the NFL. And yeah, keep your eyes peeled for fantasy football stuff. We'll be talking about that next week for sure. Because, I mean, we always love fantasy football. Fantasy football is only one of the real reasons I watch football. I mean, other than that, it kind of gets boring. If you have nothing, right? Unless you're watching your favorite team, then maybe. But fantasy football really makes it fun. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll get to our finale of this podcast. And that is our WWE WrestleBalooza predictions. Gosh, the last time we talked about WWE was Clash in Paris. And now we're back with another premium live event 20 days later. WrestleBalooza, such a random name, such a random event. Let's talk about it and discuss what we think is going to take place. So WrestlePalooza was announced just under a month ago, I would say, as there really wasn't an originally planned event for September 20th. But, you know, WWE, they love their PLEs and they love their money, and so they've decided to put on WrestlePalooza. Now, the name WrestlePalooza is originally from ECW, you know. They had a couple events from 2000 to 2003, and it was named WrestlePalooza, and there really isn't a theme of it entirely. Now, usually there were Extreme Rules matches on WrestlePalooza, but as of right now, we have no stipulations on any of our matchups, as I thought Cena and Lesnar should have easily been an Extreme Rules match, but I guess not. WWE will be going down at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which is, I believe, where the Colts play. So the Colts must be on a bye week coming up. If I were to look, I would realize, yes, they are away when they're playing the Titans. So that's, you know, good to have known, as we just talked about it, for goodness sakes. But yeah, as of right now, we have 5 matchups confirmed. I have a sneaking suspicion they're going to add a 6 on SmackDown. I think they're going to add Tiffany Stratton, Nia Jax, and Jade Cargill for the WWE Women's Championship. I think they'll add that, but since they don't have it added, I won't talk about it. So, for starters, let's go over the current card and discuss what is going to happen. First off, we have the singles match for the vacant Women's World Championship between Io Sky and Stephanie Vaquer. And I absolutely love this matchup. Stephanie Vaquer has been one of the best call-ups from NXT. She has come onto the main roster and been an absolute star. She is so over with the fans. I believe they're actually having her work on English lessons to better get her English intact so she can be primed for being a champion. As for Io Sky, we've seen her be champion before. I think she's won it like twice this year or something ridiculous like that. She was able to defend it at WrestleMania 2. Io Sky has been on fire. This was originally supposed to be Naomi versus Steffi Vaquer. However, Naomi got pregnant. Bad on you, Jimmy Uso. And now she is no longer going to be wrestling for a while. So she's literally probably going to be out a year, which is just really sad to see, especially she was getting into her prime. Now, mind you, she had won the championship back in 2017. She had had good runs before, but this really felt like Naomi's prime. So, unfortunately, no more Naomi, but we do have Io Sky and Steffi Vaquer, and I can see them putting the strap on either one of these women. Now, Steffi Vaquer, this would be the first time she's winning it, which would be really outstanding. As for Io Sky, this would be the safe option, being that we know that Io Sky has been champion. We know she can carry the belt. Maybe they don't think Steffi Vaquer is ready yet. However, I do have a theory on what I think is going to take place, and that is going to be the fact that WWE Crown Jewel, going down October 11th, is in Perth, Australia. Now, you could say they could run Io Sky versus Rhea Ripley there, but some tells me they're saving Io Sky and Rhea Ripley for WrestleMania, which leads me to believe they're going to have Steffi Vaquer win so she can face Rhea Ripley in Australia. Now, will she lose? Perhaps, but I really think that would be not only a massive matchup, but it could damn well main event that show. Also, why Io Sky, I don't believe, is going to win this is because she is involved in a program with Kairi Sane, with Asuka. She has another feud going on, which doesn't entirely need the Women's Championship at all. In fact, the Women's Championship would just become a prop she carries with her, and just like, oh yeah, she's the Women's Champion, but she actually is not defending the belt. So I think it is best for business to give Steffi Vaquer the championship. Plus, this is a great opportunity. The reigning defending champion Naomi is out of the picture. Now is a perfect opportunity for Steffi Vaquer to sneak in and win. So I'm going to go with Vaquer to win. I do think you're only going to see one title change here. By the way, there is only one title being defended on this card as of right now, or there's two actually, but I do believe it's the only one that's going to change hands. If they do add the Tiffany Stratton, Nia Jax, Jade Cargill match, I think it's a perfect opportunity to have Jade Cargill pin Nia Jax without having Tiffany Stratton actually get pinned. So if you want to have both women's championships change hands, that would be perfect. Either way, we're getting a new champion. If they do go with Io Sky, it's kind of the safer route. I like the Steffi Vacare unsafe route to really spice things up. Next up, the tag team match between the Usos, the reuniting team of Jay and Jimmy, taking on the Visions, Braun and Braun, Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker. And look, no one's excited for this. No one is excited for this matchup. Sure, the Usos are back together, but we have been seeing the exact same Raw main event take place over the last course where you have LA Knight, Jimmy Uso, Jay Uso somehow taking on Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker in either singles matches or tag teams. It has been so boring. Oh my goodness. My only hope for this is that you see the Braun and Bronson Reed connection. Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker, the Braun Bronze, LeBron James. You're getting it all done here. You know, they have been losing left, right, and center on PLEs. They lost at SummerSlam. They lost to Clash in Paris. Now it's time for them to win. If they don't win here, I'm not going to take them serious. They're just going to be backup, background characters for Seth Rollins and The Vision in this little feud or whatever. They're the faction they have. Now, for the Usos, this is kind of good. They're reuniting. However, I do think LA Knight's going to get involved to some degree. I do think they're teasing a Jey Uso heel turn. I don't see it coming. I would love to see more so an LA Knight heel turn take place here. But I think best for business, Bronson Reed, Braun Breaker getting it done. This should be an entertaining matchup. The entrances should be fun. And I do think this should be for the World Tag Team Championships. It makes no sense why the Judgment Day have him. So whatever happens out of these two teams, I at least hope they go and challenge at Crown Jewel or even on Monday Night Raw for the Tag Team Championships because they really need to save the Raw Tag Team titles. They're in a desperate situation with those. They're just dead. The division's dead. So the Vision, Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker, I got them beating the Usos, Jey Uso, and Jimmy Uso. To be more specific, I am going to say Braun Breaker pins Jimmy Uso. That's going to be my prediction, or either otherwise LA Knight gets involved, costs it for Jey Uso, and Jey Uso is pinned by Braun Breaker. So that's why I think it's going to go down. Should be an entertaining matchup. Next up, the bigger tag team match. One of the biggest matchups on this entire card. Some people are saying it should be the main event. I disagree, but it is going to be amazing as CM Punk and his wife AJ Lee take on Seth Rollins and his wife Becky Lynch in a mixed tag team matchup. And this is the biggest mixed tag team matchup of all time. Like, genuinely, we were all trying to think of what has been the biggest tag team matchup of all time, and nothing comes close to this. Like, genuinely, nothing else comes close to this, and it's just so amazing. AJ Lee returning, she's been great on the mic. She's looked good in ring. I can't wait to see her actually in a match for the first time in almost a decade. Crazy enough. Now, I do think CM Punk AJ Lee have to win. Like if you have them lose to the Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch here, that's like, why would they even feud like this in the first place? I think it's safe to say that AJ Lee pinning Becky Lynch is the move. This Seth Rollins and CM Punk feud is going to spill over probably until WrestleMania. Like, this is just never ending. It's weird to think these two have been feuding pretty much since CM Punk came back and Seth Rollins was doing facial reactions and saying stuff while he returned in Chicago, and it's just never stopped since then. As for AJ Lee and Becky Lynch, this is brand new. I would love to see the Intercontinental Championship get mixed in, and I could even see them running this back where it's like a winner take all matchup where Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins both put their belts on the line against CM Punk and AJ Lee, maybe in a stipulation match at Crown Jewel at Survivor Series War Games. I'm very excited to see where this feud goes, but I do think CM Punk and AJ Lee winning is the correct move. However, WWE in the past has brought back people such as CM Punk, such as Brock Lesnar, such as a lot of guys where they return, they lose right off the bat. So we'll have to see, but I'm going to go with CM Punk and AJ Lee, and I will be rooting for them as I'm going to be watching this in Chicago, Illinois. Then, what I predict will be the second-to-last matchup of the night, it very could well be the main event on a regular card without John Cena and Brock Lesnar, that is the undisputed WWE Championship matchup between Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre. Out of all the matchups on this card, I will say it as the second best build. I will say this is as the second best build. You've had Drew McIntyre take out Cody Rhodes. You then have him going on a tear. He's beating Randy Orton. And then Cody Rhodes returns. He stops him. He says, I'll see you at WrestlePalooza. And we are going to get one more glimpse at this feud on Friday Night SmackDown. I believe we're going to have a verbal exchange of some kind. And I just don't think this is the time to give Drew McIntyre the belt over Cody Rhodes. I really don't. That feels like it's going to be a big moment. And I know that people are also thinking that CM Punk will be the one to defeat Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. That could very well happen. But I really think Drew McIntyre is in such a position where him being the heel, him winning would be perfect. I would really love to see it. And what I would also really love to see is that maybe before the end of the year, you have Cody Rhodes lose to Drew McIntyre. He can go off and maybe do stuff because Cody Rhodes is blowing up in popularity. So he's getting movie deals. He's getting sponsorships and stuff. And you have Randy Orton feud with Drew McIntyre for the belt. Then maybe Randy Orton wins it. Maybe Cody Rhodes comes back and Cody Rhodes Rhodes beats Randy Orton in their final feud, where you actually see Randy Orton as a heel. I think that would be super fun. But as for this, as specifically for WrestlePalooza, this should be good wrestling. I hope that doesn't end in like a no disqualification or in a count out or something like that, or end in a DQ, I should say. I wish it was a no DQ match. Really, those matchups have been killing it for WWE, where they actually run stipulation matchups, but they, for some reason, hate stipulation matches. I don't know why. Cody Rhodes over Drew McIntyre. I don't know. Something tells me something big is going to happen, because you have to remember, this is the first pay-per-view, or I guess PLE, my bad, first PLE for WWE on ESPN. They are going to pull out all the stops. I think you're going to see some returns here. I think you're going to see some big moments. For this matchup in particular, maybe a Randy Orton heel turn could be in the cards. I don't really know who could return or something could happen. For CM Punk and AJ Lee versus Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch, I don't really think any returns. The Usos and The Vision, certainly someone getting involved, but I don't know. I think the big return, the big reveal is going to be in the main event, John Cena versus Brock Lesnar. Now, some people are annoyed with this. Some people are annoyed with the buildup. You have to understand, this is not traditional buildup. John Cena only appears at certain dates. Brock Lesnar has never done well when he is the one on a mic trying to build up a feud. So you are going to see Brock Lesnar this upcoming Friday on SmackDown, and I do think he's going to be super entertaining. But for this matchup, I gotta go with John Cena. All right, I really think you gotta have John Cena win. It's gotta be John Cena getting his lick back after 10 years. You gotta remember, last time they fought, SummerSlam, I know it wasn't the actual last time, but it feels like their last time, 2014, Brock Lesnar mauled John Cena. So I'm hoping this is the opposite, where Brock Lesnar is going for his classic moves and John Cena is reversing them, and John Cena's getting the better of him, and it's going super well for John Cena. And there's just a couple things. I think a lot of people aren't even concerned with the outcome of this match. I think there's a possibility of three different things for John Cena, including this matchup. So the first one I'm going to say is the most likely, and that is John Cena beats Brock Lesnar and his new opponent comes down, and that is who he feuds with at Crown Jewel. And literally the storyline for that is, I attack John Cena, I get to face him at Crown Jewel, and Brock Lesnar can just go back to kind of second fiddle. I'm sure they'll find a feud for him coming up into WrestleMania season, but that is what we can do. And there are rumors Chris Jericho might return, which would be utterly ridiculous. There's rumors it could be Gunther. There is a lot of possibilities, but I am excited to see who they go with. I'll tell you something that I think they've missed the ball on with John Cena, and that is not having him wrestle on every single card he's on. Like, he was on Monday Night Raw in Springfield, Massachusetts, and he cut a decent promo, but other than that, he did nothing. And I think there was a really good opportunity for him to have a matchup with someone on that card. People are saying Dominic Mysterio. I thought maybe a Miz match would have been fun as well, but I just hope this is fun. I hope it's entertaining. I hope it's not a typical John Cena-Brock Lesnar match, because as we've seen, John Cena can put on unique matches, such as Sami Zayn, such as Logan Paul, such as the Cody Rhodes rematch, so we know that he can do things. But there is option one, where the person returns after the matchup. Option two is that, you know, Brock Lesnar or John Cena win, doesn't matter who, and John Cena issues an open challenge for Crown Jewel. He says, maybe in a promo or maybe after the event, look, guys, I didn't get it done today, or maybe, guys, I did get it done today, I'm on top of the world. Crown Jewel, whoever wants to face me can see me there, I'll be there, whoever wants to face me, show up. I could see that being a real possibility. The third option, this one I think is not on that many people's radar, that is this matchup ends in controversy to some extent, and they run it back in an Extreme Rules and a Last Man Standing and no DQ at Crown Jewel. You know, it's Saudi Arabia. Or no, you know, it's not Saudi Arabia. It's Perth, Australia. Whenever they go overseas, they always put on big events, for especially for Crown Jewel, for like these, whatever these Saudi Arabian events is. And this really feels like a Saudi event, even though it's in Perth, Australia. So I'm going to go with John Cena to win. I hope he wins. You know, I've been a big fan of John Cena on his, you know, retirement tour. And I just hope this is entertaining. At the end of the day, I hope it's entertaining. I presume they'll add one match on SmackDown, like I've said. They could add two, but as of right now, looking like it's just going to be five. So, John Cena hopefully beating Brock Lesnar, and hopefully a big return is what we are hoping for. Because they're going to be one really want to sell people on going over to ESPN, on switching over, and, you know, keeping a retaining of customers. And I think one thing also is, how goofy is the name WrestlePalooza? That's got to be the dumbest name ever. They couldn't have picked a better name. They couldn't have done Armageddon. They couldn't have done No Way Out. They couldn't have done a fun name. They go, WrestlePalooza. And it's funny watching wrestlers cut promos trying to say WrestlePalooza in a serious manner, because it just doesn't sound serious at all. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have for today and also for this week. That's all we got on the weekly podcast. It was fun. Fun episode. Week 3 of the NFL should be fun. I'm excited for the next episode of Dan White's Contender Series. It's been one of my favorite shows to watch every every Tuesday. And as for WrestlePalooza, you best bet once the weekend's over, we're going to be recapping this and talking about everything that went down. So, ladies and gentlemen, you all have an amazing weekend. You all have an amazing life. The Lord loves you. I love you. And I just pray that your life is filled with joy and blessings and awesomeness. You know, like The Miz, you know, awesome. Okay, WWE fans get that reference, let me know. But guys, have a good one, and I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.